What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Go!
Hey, everyone. J.J. Cooper, Jeff Ponce, another of these Baseball America Prospects State of the Organization deep dives. And today, it's the St. Louis Cardinals. We're going to dive in to an organization, a storied organization, a long-time, basically, World Series contender perennially. Is one of really, you would say right now, we are one quarter of the way through the 21st century. And if you're talking about the dominant organizations of the 21st century, you have to include the St. Louis Cardinals in that list. They've made the World Series multiple times. They've won World Series. But obviously, this is right now a time that is not a fun time for Cardinals fans. This is coming off of a 2024 season that is really below kind of the expectation level that the Cardinals had coming into last year, and really kind of well below the bar of what is expected out of the Cardinals every year. It was a bleak 2024 to start with, Jeff, as we kind of just dive into this. Great to be with you again. But how bleak is it for 25 and beyond?
I think it really depends. There's some conversations that we'll probably dig into at some point on this podcast regarding development at the major league level and how a lot of these prospects have either developed or not developed. I think there is some, you probably have to call into question some of their self-evaluation within their own organization, as we have seen some pretty impactful players leave and go to other organizations without really getting a fair shake. I think the primary example there is certainly Randy Arozarena, Adolis Garcia, which you can put on them or not, because obviously he was DFA'd by other teams afterward. I think you look across the league and there are players that they've traded, particularly outfielders, that might be missing elements that they don't have. If Arozarena was on this team last year, he's the Cardinals' best hitter. If Adolis Garcia is on this team in 2023, he's probably the Cardinals' best hitter. And that includes Goldschmidt or Arenado. I think you look at Goldschmidt's time there was fine. I think you look at Arenado's time there and they really haven't gotten what they thought they were going to get out of Arenado. He's really started to slide back to much more of an average player. And I think even when you looked at the trade rumors this offseason around Arenado, there was a lot of like prior notoriety and fame that was making him a more attractive option than he actually was. Still a good defensive third baseman, but the offensive impact just has not been there. And, when they made that trade a few years ago, they intended for this to be their middle of the order bat for some time to come. And I think that they've made some aggressive moves and they just really haven't worked out. Though I know if you talk to a lot of Cardinals fans, they all tell you that they haven't been aggressive enough in pitching, but pitching wasn't their problem last year. ERA wise, I think they were 17th, but in terms of pitcher war, they were 11th or 12th in baseball. That's enough to get it done. If you have a top 15, top 10 type of offense, they were not in that range. And I think that there's a lot of things over the last 2 years in particular. And it's also been, I think, the only 2 years that they haven't had a 500 or better winning percentage since 2007. So it's been quite a long time since they've been bad, but these have been two of the worst years of probably the last 30 to 40 years, consecutive at least, for this franchise. So they're at sort of a point where something needs to happen.
It does feel like that the 24 season from that standpoint was actually in many ways potentially beneficial. And in a way like that, you don't want bad news, but if bad news helps you get to improvement, it's better than not knowing. because I feel like that coming out of the 23 season, it was still possible to say like, okay, that was a down year, but you know, we're the Cardinals, we're going to bounce back. After last year, it's something where it's much clearer, like, no, there are actual issues here that have to be fixed. And I think the key one, you kind of hit on it, but the Cardinals, one of the things to me, I've been at BA for, again, longer than I usually use the line now, longer than I would like to admit, but 22 years. And over that time, going back to when I started at BA, like when we talk about the Cardinals way and you talk about George Kissel and you talk about their ability to develop, they were always kind of known, like you can talk about, they did a great job drafting under the Luhnow era and all that. But the other thing they did with that is that they would draft players year after year who the question often was like, well, we like the bat, but where is he going to play defensively? And time after time, they were able to help guys get better defensively to where they could play at kind of the upper end of their projected level on the defensive spectrum. Matt Carpenter, Paul DeJong, Harrison Bader. I know Harrison Bader, people are now going to say, Harrison Bader is a really good defender in center field. That's kind of his calling card. Coming out of Florida, it wasn't. Coming out of Florida, it was like, is he a center fielder or not? And they've done that kind of time and time again with more players than we're going to spend the time listing. They were really good at development, both in the minor leagues, but I would say also at the major league level, where players kept getting better in the majors. And if you look at the last few years, obviously they've had a lot of turmoil, a lot of turnover at the big league level on the coaching staff side, on the managerial side, and all that. But you would have to say, I think that one of the things that jumps out is Dylan Carlson being a 22-year-old for them, who is then basically dumped just a few years later. Nolan Gorman taking a step back in 24 after a solid 23. Jordan Walker reaching the majors, one of the top prospects in baseball, looking lost, and then the follow-up year not looking any better and really still looking like, okay, defensively, defense is still kind of his Achilles heel that we don't know, are they going to be able to fix it? There's probably too many of these stories right now, which is really kind of almost counter to what I think of as what I've thought of as organizational strengths for the Cardinals.
Yeah. And I think you look at the Jordan Walker story and it is a story of development. And, you know, it's not only a story of the Cardinals maybe not doing the right things, but not getting the player to buy in on the changes that he needs to make to become the best version of himself. And I think that's been a struggle with Walker, because he has this outlier impact and ability and athleticism for his size, but learning to hit has not been easy. And I would actually argue he took a step back this year at the major league level after putting up a decent season as a rookie in 2023. The way that it was handled was messy. I don't think it was necessarily probably good for the player in terms of the mental side of things. As we know, young players can struggle with that sort of thing. And the time in AAA didn't seem like it really was bearing fruit. We didn't see him start to lift the ball more with authority and get the ball in the air consistently. You know, the ground ball rate has more or less stayed the same throughout his minor league career. And that's a concern. He's somebody that needs to hit the ball in the air more with the impact he has, because that's what his superpower is. And they haven't been able to channel that and get to it. And I think that ultimately that's a big problem.
But I would also say with this, and we've seen this story with the case of him, with the case of Gorman, especially, it fits what they do, right? Like Jordan Walker was a third baseman. The question was, could he be a third baseman? Then he goes to the majors as an outfielder. And I would say there's even more questions about whether he can actually be an outfielder. Nolan Gorman was a third baseman. And I get it, admittedly, they had traded for Arenado, but they moved him to second. Like we've got a lot of these guys who I would say are kind of playing, are being asked to play different positions than maybe is ideal for them, which it makes sense with the Cardinals. They've done that time and time again, but right now I don't feel like it's working as much. It doesn't feel like that these guys, like you talk about Jordan Walker as a hitter. I kind of feel like also there needs to probably be a little bit of a reduction of defensive pressure on him as well. admittedly, he's not, like, we're not talking about the Jordan Walker's playing shortstop, but there are definitely some moments out there in the outfield where it does not look, like he's real comfortable out there. And, if he's the productive hitter they want him to be, it kind of doesn't matter where he plays. He could be their next first baseman. He's big enough to do that. But it does seem like that they're not necessarily like that. That's another problem here. It feels like is that these guys are, you know, again, big league, like you said, big league development. They need some of these guys to take a step forward if this team's going to be successful, right?
Yeah, I think he needs to take a step forward. They'll need Victor Scott the second to take a step forward offensively. I think he was kind of pushed to the majors last year because of the string of injuries that they had. He wasn't ready yet. That was pretty obvious. He struggled in AAA as well. So that's another one where, yeah, he has this outlier defensive ability and speed, but is the hit tool there enough of a hit tool to consistently get to it that he can be an everyday regular and, you know, not only survive, but thrive with his skill set. And I think, you know, that's a bit of a question. I even think you look at some of the signings, you look at a guy like Wilson Contreras, they signed as a catcher, and it almost feels like they didn't necessarily do the due diligence on what he was going to be like as an everyday catcher defensively.
It took it felt like a month of the season for them to be like, oh no, this is not Yadier Molina. And it's like, no, this was never going to be Yadier Molina.
Yeah. Into the contract. And, you know, I think we have Ivan Herrera now, who showed pretty well down the stretch. We'll see what he develops into, you know, another homegrown catcher, another homegrown player. They have a ton of homegrown position players all up and down this roster, frankly. Outside of Contreras and Arenado, everybody else is homegrown, including the bench.
And Lars Nootbaar has been a nice, you know, again, they got a guy like, you know, they've gotten guys like Lars Nootbaar. Mason Wynn had a really, like, this really is not work. All doom and gloom. Wynn showed last year, this is your shortstop of the now and the future. Fair?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, Brandon Donovan has been a nice development story to them as he's kind of turned into a heart and soul player and a guy that will do pretty much anything that they want him to do, including play the outfield, which is not necessarily his natural position. So there is some positive stuff here. I think
Alec Burleson
is absolutely a positive development. They've gotten as much as I thought this early from Burleson as anybody would have gotten. So I think Nootbaar for me is a guy that, and I'm sure they feel the same way, regardless of what the draft, cost was in the eighth round, whatever. It's a great story. The player they thought they were getting and he was developing into, he really hasn't gotten to that point over the last 2 years. I think there was a lot of headwinds when he was playing for Japan, was coming off a really, really good 2022, and 23 and 24 haven't seen him sort of take that step up to a potential all-star, which I think they needed, frankly. They need this lineup to be more productive. It's not a bad lineup in terms of the personnel, but so many of these players have produced underneath what the expectations were.
That kind of leads to the next question, which is that this is also an unusual situation. We don't see this very often, where essentially what you have here is you have an organization that knows that they're making a change in the front office, but they're making that change a year from now. Chaim Bloom is tasked this year. He was brought in last year, but he's tasked this year. His main focus is to work on rebuilding, further developing the player development side of the Cardinals, which is something that Chaim Bloom was part of and doing a really good job with the Rays. And if Red Sox fans want to have complaints about Chaim Bloom, there are some you can have. You're not going to complain about what he did as far as building up the farm system, which is now a truly top-tier farm system. He's going to do that. And then it's like, and here now the keys to the Cardinals. Like, the plan is that it's 1 year doing this, and then Mozeliak, this is his final year. And then it's like Mo hands the keys to Chaim Bloom and says, okay, now it's your job. What we're going to get into, I want to ask you the question of what Chaim Bloom can do for this Cardinals team. We'll do that right after this quick break.
When spring training arrives, major league teams know that they have to have depth. They have to have contingency plans. No major league team goes into the season planning to have five starters make all the starts. Being prepared for life and life's events is even more important, which is why I have life insurance through SelectQuote to protect my family's financial future. SelectQuote is one of America's leading insurance brokers with nearly 40 years of experience, helping over 2 million customers, including me, find over $700 billion in coverage since 1985. Other life insurance brokers offer impersonal, one-size-fits-all policies that cost you more and cover you less. While SelectQuote's licensed insurance agents work for you to tailor a life insurance policy for your individual needs in as little as 15 minutes. You invest so much time to take care of yourself and to be the healthiest, best version of you. SelectQuote's exclusive policies can reward that effort. If you're in good health, they work with carriers that can give you the same-day coverage for up to $5 million with no medical exam required. And these policies are more affordable than you think. You can get coverage for up to $1 million for as little as $20 per month. Head to SelectQuote.com and a licensed insurance agent will call you right away with the right policy for your life and your budget. SelectQuote. They shop, you save. Get the right life insurance for you for less at SelectQuote.com/BA. Go to SelectQuote.com/BA today to get started. That's SelectQuote.com/BA.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
So, Jeff, what can Chaim Bloom, what can he mean for the Cardinals?
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of modernizing their processes. And I drew this sort of simile between the Astros' current state and where the Cardinals were 3 or 4 years ago, where I feel like they were so far ahead of the curve for so many years in terms of their development, in terms of their acquisition and targeting for players. They just did so well there that as more advanced data started to become more prevalent and teams were trying more processes, the Cardinals didn't develop at the rate that other organizations did. So some of their processes and some of their acquisition models, et cetera, I think are just a little bit outdated. You look at the type of pitchers that they target. Michael McGreevy had a nice season, got up to the big league, could be part of this rotation this year. But you're not targeting pitchers at that point with upside. And I think that's a major sticking point. Over the last year or two, you've started to see at the lower levels, like Lynn, for example, some harder throwers, some guys with bigger stuff. That was not something that my first year, 3 years covering this system, that were common. There were a lot of left-handers that threw a lot of strikes and sat 90 to 92 miles an hour, right? And so I think some of that is going to be changed by Bloom. I think that the pitching development side of things in terms of pitch design, things like that, maybe velocity training, stuff that the Cardinals really haven't been good about or been able to get results with whatever programs they've had in place over the last couple of years. He's had a proven track record at two different organizations of doing that. You can say that the Red Sox don't have the pitching prospects that other systems have. The Red Sox have never had pitching prospects dating back to when I was going to minor league games in the 80s. They just haven't. Like Buchholz and Lester were so unusual for the Red Sox history. They now have interesting arms. You go there now to a Red Sox minor league game and you see a variety of guys with different arm actions and different arm slots throwing different movement profiles. You know, it's almost like a Rays bullpen. So you could kind of see how Bloom's vision started to come to fruition. We saw what the Red Sox farm system did this year. I'm sorry, but in a few months, you don't take that kind of step forward just from this or that. Bloom also was involved with them bringing in Driveline, bringing in Ochart and the bat speed training program. So a lot of the processes that worked were not the reason that Bloom was let go. It was because of the underperformance of the major league roster and some of the stuff that goes on at the executive level in Boston, where there is a sort of a star chamber of VPs.
And I would also say when your first act that you're asked to do is to do something that basically you're almost impossible. Now, they failed at it. Let's just be clear. They failed at it. Like, you, if you're going to trade a star, you're going to lose the trade almost without fail. You trade Juan Soto, you're not going to win the Juan Soto trade. Juan Soto is really good. However,
Nats
might trade Juan Soto. Do what the Nats did, because like that's the kind of trade where you're like, well, we did get a middle of our rotation starter and a potential star outfielder and our starting shortstop and some other pieces. Okay.
And one of our best pitching prospects. Yeah.
Yeah. And one of our best pitching prospects. Wow. If you trade Mookie Betts and you say, well, what did we get back? And you're like, well, we got a couple of years of a league average ish outfielder.
Corner outfielder.
What else? Well, that's
and a bad defensive catcher.
A catcher.
And a
backup catcher
that you have to figure out who can play good enough defense to supplement him. And then Jeter Downs, who has bounced around a variety of organizations, I think is headed to Japan this year. I mean, he just is an absolute nothing.
Okay. Sorry, we got sidetracked here because this is a Cardinals conversation, not a Red Sox conversation. But the point being, that was something that put him off on a wrong foot. But again, that was something where if no one wants to trade, no one should be looking to trade a Mookie Betts. You don't trade MVPs. But what you're talking about here with the Cardinals, I do feel like the way I would put it, Jeff, is I feel like that there are like you mentioned about the Astros, right? Like the Astros, I feel like if you say, well, Lunau, when he was with the Cardinals and then when he went to the Astros, one of the things he did best, I would say, is found ways to say, like, we can take a big leap forward in here. And the thing I feel like that gets lost in that, and Ozacampo and others deserve, you know, pitching development, I'll deserve a lot of credit for this too. But look at what the Astros did in addition to the draft, in addition to all that. Look at what they did as far as acquiring, signing, and developing international Latin American pitchers who developed into starters. And by the way, also did that a lot of it's like, yeah, I know that he's low, you know, he's a low priority guy for most guys because he's gasped 17 or, oh no, he's an old man. He's 18. We're going to sign him and watch him develop. And they did that better than anybody. And they, I would say, were on the cusp where they found low hanging fruit as far as pitch development, as far as, hey, we're going to give all these guys basically a 5-pitch mix that's going to give them a better chance of starting. We're going to tandem starter these guys, which gives them a better chance of starting. They did a lot of great things on that. But I would say with the Cardinals now, with Chaim Bloom, there is room here. There are opportunities here because, as you said, this is an organization that it's not like it's had no success. Like you look at that Mason Wynn draft and that's still that's a draft that could really, Mason Wynn and Tink Hense and all, this is a draft that could really pay off for them. It's not like they have done a complete, they don't know how to draft at all. It's not like they haven't produced big leaguers, but they could still take, I feel like a big step forward in the next couple of years if they can add some low-hanging fruit, some additional tweaks. You mentioned like, hey, we're either going to become an organization. Okay, we love to draft command and control. You can make that work if you then have a velocity program that turns those 90, 92 into 93, 94, 95. Or we're going to take the guys with velocity and we're going to really work on their pitch mixes and all. They've kind of been neither of those in the last few years, I feel like.
Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah, I think that's spot on.
So when you look at this team right now, though, is it something where is this another transition year? Is this a year where it's like 78 wins would be a solid step forward and getting a foundation for the future? Or is there short-term hope here, or is it more of you need to be looking with a long-term focus?
Personally,
this farm system especially.
Yeah, personally, when I look at, you know, this roster this year, I don't know anything that they've done outside of players that we talked about that have underproduced getting better. That's going to make them a better team than they were last year at 83 wins. And I even think to some extent, maybe even overachieved a little bit. You look at the rotation outside of Sonny Gray, it's kind of old and a little underwhelming. So I think, you know, that's certainly a problem. There are some arms that are on the cusp or have already debuted. You know, I don't think Graceffo is going to be a rotation piece. I do think that, you know, there is some potential for McGreevy to give them good back end innings. You know, they have Sem Rabursi, they got Tekoa Roby and Tink Hentz all on the 40-man roster at this point. But with Hentz and Roby, we just don't know what version of that guy are you getting. Are they going to be able to stay healthy over the long haul and give you, you know, even 130 innings in a season? I think that's a question. And then you have a guy like Sem Rabursi who, depending upon who you talk to, it's rotation fodder at the back end or maybe a number five. So, you know, the pitching, I think, performed well last year. I don't know that outside of Gray and probably Eric Fetty that you can count on a 36, 37-year-old Miles Mikolas or, you know, an Andre Pallante who was fine, but, you know, you'd rather that guy was your number five or a 33, 34-year-old Steven Matz. So I think that's a large part of the question, and some of it is the young pitching prospects that they drafted early in drafts or traded for, like Liberatore or Zach Thompson, have really just developed into relievers.
I kind of feel like with that, and when I look at this farm system, I do feel like that this team might be well served by using this as a consolidation year, right?
I agree. Yeah.
Take some lumps. I know that's probably not if you're, you know, if you're John Mozeliak in your final year, and if you're not, like, there's a lot of people who, like, I understandably, you don't want this to be a third straight year like the, you know, like the last two have been. But at the same time, I do feel like that with this team, if you said, like, if you laid out to me and said, what is your optimistic hope for this year? I would say at the end of this year, what you want to see is, we got Jordan Walker fixed. Now, I don't mean Jordan Walker is an all-star. That's like, I think that's asking too much in here. But Jordan Walker is now someone who we comfortably know is part of our plans for 26 and beyond. We got Nolan Gorman at a position where it allows Nolan Gorman to be the best he can be. We know what our catching situation is for the next several years, whether that's Herrera, whether that's, you know, if whether it's one of your favorites, Jimmy Crooks, coming up, you know, at some point, right? Like they have catching prospects there.
They always have catching.
although they always had catching, and Yadier Molina always was better than whoever they had at catcher, you know, and probably still is, to be honest, if you wanted to come back tomorrow. But figuring that out, figuring out the field, figuring out the rotation to some point, like is, you know, yeah. Could, if one of those guys, if Tink Hentz, who at his best is really, really good, but if Tink Hentz can be healthy all year, show some durability, and just be like, hey, we feel comfortable penciling as our number four starter next year. All these things would be really positive developments. Yeah. And that leads into, we haven't even talked about the number one prospect yet.
Or the number two.
Or the number two. That leads into, okay, is J.J. Weatherholt the fix of some of what ails the Cardinals here?
Maybe. I think in terms of pure hitters that they've had, and even that might be a bad term, well-rounded all-around offensive players. I don't know that they've had a guy like this over the last couple of years. You know, this was one of the most productive hitters in college baseball over the last couple of years, you know, won a batting title, you know, was led the nation in hitting as a sophomore. There's power here. Anybody who's seen him in person and done any sort of serious work on him talks about 55 to 60 run times. A lot of people within the organization think he can potentially stick at shortstop. at worst, end up at third base and be a really good, solid defensive third baseman with a bat that kind of backs it. I've gotten some Alex Bregman type of comps just from the player. Personality-wise, they're different people. He's not Bregman. I don't think he's going to be wearing his draft
Most
number.
People are different personality-wise from Bregman.
There aren't many people like that. But I think in terms of what you could hope for, it could be a player like that where it's a really well all-around great hit tool. There's enough power here. There's some speed. He's good in the field. He could be a star for this team, and he could be the long-term answer at third base. I think, you know, even going back to Jordan Walker, I think when you look at the components here, the floor is higher with Weatherholt. Maybe the ceiling isn't, but even that, when you consider his defensive ability, his running ability, maybe the ceiling is a little higher. Just the home run ceiling maybe isn't as high. He's not going to hit 35 bombs, but could hit 25 with a good batting average, good on-base percentage, steal some bases, and save you some runs in the field. So I do think that to an extent, he is an answer to what ails them. They were over the moon that he fell to them. Where he did, because they didn't anticipate that.
And they shouldn't have. Like, that was the one, like, it. If you were doing 1,000 mock drafts on this, I'm not saying that there weren't, you know, that it was a 1 out of 1,000 chance or whatever, but everything had to fall right for Weatherholt to get to them, because there are other scenarios where Weatherholt would have heard his name called at the very top of the draft. I mean, again,
yeah,
it was, he there was a chance that range.
I mean, we were hearing rumors the day before that he was the alternate to Bazzana at the first pick and then dropped down to 7. That was the shock of the draft, and it's not often the shock of the draft happens in the top 10.
And it does. I mean, it's something where we may look back on and go, wow, that really did help turn things around. The key thing, as you said, the key thing that does stand out to me is the Cardinals have had a lot of guys in recent years, again, going back to their old approach, where it's like, okay, this guy's got a bat, but now the question is his defense. Other than Mason Winn. Mason Winn, that was not really a question, by the way. I possess the greatest right arm.
Yeah.
You know, in that you're going to see. But a lot of these other guys, it's like, okay, where is he going to play defensively? In the case of Weatherholt, it's like, probably not going to move Mason Winn off shortstop. But you say, so the interesting thing to me is I kind of thought when he was in college that there was also a decent chance that Weatherholt could end up at second. Why do you think third rather than second?
I think second base is probably possible as well. The arm is solid, and just the feedback I had gotten internally, it was more that he would move to third as opposed to shortstop.
So it's because he's better defensively, really.
Yeah, and they have some options probably long term at second base in a player like Sajacy, who's just outside of this top three.
So, but it really is with Weatherholt. The other thing that we don't want to underplay here is what you really are talking about. It's one of the better pure bats that we've seen in the draft last year, and really the last several years. I mean, this is a guy who is a former D1 batting champ. You did it last year, not this year, but did it as a sophomore. The batting champ, there's a real comfortable and a confidence here that this is a guy who's just going to hit, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is the overwhelming sentiment.
So that's their number one prospect. But I do feel like if you really want to get Jeff excited, there's another guy that we've got to talk about. So if Weatherholt's their top prospect, who's their most interesting prospect to you?
Oh, well, I'm not sure that you'd get the answer you want, but I'll say Quinn Matthews. You know, I think at number
I wasn't
two,
going there. I was going Yairo. I think that Padilla is the guy that you're most interested in.
Oh, yeah, it's Yairo Padilla. I thought you were serving me up for Quinn Matthews, but no,
I was asking sincerely, and Padilla, I know, is the one that, like, I can't get you to shut up about.
Well, I feel like the reporting that we did, what Josh did initially, his DSL reporting was great this year. I think it really put us in a position to give you the best, most accurate lists because we had eyes down there and, you know, had the ability to network with some scouts, et cetera, and get some feedback. Everybody was raving about Padilla. I kind of reached out to some internal resources that are domestic. They didn't know much about him. They started reaching out to contacts within the organization, and the feedback was like overwhelming immediately. It's like, oh yeah, everyone thinks he's a dude. And then he went out to their hitting camps this offseason, and him and then Raniel Rodriguez, who was the other DSL standout but doesn't have the same defensive profile and skills that Padilla has, they were the standouts of that camp. And I think that you could look at the underlying data and maybe miss this player a little bit. He was productive. There's a ton of tools. He's even grown a little bit since last year. I've heard that he's up to 6'4" now. There is some Tatis-ish kind of twitch stuff going on with Padilla. I don't know if the upside is that high, but these are the kind of prospects that you follow and then see develop into high upside players. And I don't know if the Cardinals have had an international signing that's even close to him or Rodriguez in the last couple of years in terms of the first time he hit the field, he was productive and good. And he was really young. I think he was maybe 16 for the first month or so of the DSL season. So a complex guy next year that maybe sees a cup of coffee and full season ball, but more than likely we won't see like full season Padilla until 2026. But this is a very exciting prospect. And if I was a Cardinals prospect, this is somebody that I would be really honing in, keying in on when I'm looking around and reading articles, and I'd be asking questions in the chats every week to BA and others about what's going on with the Ariel Padilla. Any updates? Because it's everything we've gotten feedback wise has been really loud.
And we do need to end this. We do want to touch on our minor league pitcher of the year. By the time we're recording this, by the time you are watching this, I'll probably even post a photo on the video of this, of me giving Quinn Matthews his minor league pitcher of the award, because I'm heading to St. Louis to the St. Louis Baseball Writers Association dinner to present that. But Quinn Matthews had, not only was it a dominating season, started in low A, dominated, high A dominated, double A dominated, triple A didn't dominate, but that was at the very end of a very long season for him. But made it to triple A, should start there again, should start back there in 25. But the thing that we do need to highlight, one of the things here is you mentioned, like when we talk about some of these guys, how many, like, are they going to be able to hold up, or do they have the durability to keep that stuff going all year? I don't have those concerns with Quinn Matthews. Quinn Matthews went out there and took on a professional workload. He did that also at Stanford as well. I think that this is the guy who does show that he can handle innings. What is there to be excited about with Quinn Matthews?
Yeah, I think he's not only shown the ability to handle innings, he's shown the ability to make adjustments and get better. The fastball velocity just took a massive jump last year, as did the velocity across his arsenal. And it really allowed everything to play up because he had good pitch shapes. You know, somebody that was drafted by the Rays in 22 and certainly could have signed at that point in time and started his professional career. He went back to Stanford, you know, pitched in some big games, was kind of the anchor of that rotation, showed how durable he is. You know, obviously had a heroic performance. And was that a regional game, or was a regional game? It wasn't a College World Series game.
Yeah.
I believe it was a regional game. And there just aren't many guys that can do that. It's, you know, I hate using the term rubber arm because these guys can break any minute, but he does kind of fall into that category as somebody that you would probably throw the rubber arm label onto. And, you know, it's not just a fastball either. It's a good slider. It's a good changeup. It's a starter's mix and qualities, and really seems like the first time that taking the soft tossing lefty and trying to up his velocity for the Cardinals has worked. And, we'll see how it comes to fruition. I would imagine that he's going to see double-digit starts for the Cardinals this year. I'll put my number there. I can't say that he's
going to play. I would be shocked if he doesn't, because
15 starts, I think, is probably pretty reasonable to expect. Maybe more.
30. I would be shocked if we don't see something like that, just from the standpoint that we are talking about a guy who has already shown. You're not looking at that same question about how many innings can he throw. Mm-hmm. You know, that to me makes a difference.
100%.
But it's an interesting farm system that is kind of at an interesting point in their development, kind of an inflection point. I do think you'll be interested when we're doing this next year, talking about see where they are and where they've come over the past year. Thank you again for the listening to the Baseball America podcast. And if you're on YouTube, please subscribe. you know, click the bell to get notifications when we post new ones. We're doing this. We're rolling these out fast and getting them, trying to get them all out before spring training really gets going. So if you're enjoying these organizational deep dives, we're going to keep them coming fast and regularly. If you enjoyed this, also check out the Baseball America Prospect Handbook, which has reports on all the Cardinals prospects, but also the top 30s, scouting reports on all top 30s for all 30 organizations. And at baseballamerica.com, we have more content than you could possibly consume. If this is what you like, you absolutely will enjoy a Baseball America subscription. For Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.
Wow. What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.